Hello and welcome to this very, very special episode of DWN's Terrible Horror Crap Podcast, sponsored by Fast Custom Shirts at boygob.com. I figure we gotta start switching it up, so when we do the switch, you don't fuck it all up.
Yeah, I don't even know what our podcast name is called, but we've got a special interview today with the head honcho, the big cheese, if you will, of Severin Films, David Gregory, who's not only the film distributor guy, he's like the fucking documentarian now, with two big documentaries to his name. So welcome, David. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Sure.
Are you going to talk like that the whole time?
Well, usually we'd have actually been face to face by this point in the year. We'd have had our annual catch up, but stupid shit in the world has prevented that from happening. So I thought, you know, when you asked me to do this, this is going to have to be the next best thing, isn't it?
It is. We do have some fun, and I appreciate you coming on for sure, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, right off the bat, this is probably the most important question you're going to be asked today, and that's how's the website doing?
Oh, a shiver just went down my spine. Well, it's functional right now. It is still undergoing a lot of maintenance and a complete we've changed over to a new host and it's having a complete revamp. But we don't want to launch that until we're fairly certain that it's working. But the funny thing is that we are actually going to launch it again when we announce our next titles, which are extremely exciting. So it may just crap out again and cause another onslaught of anger and hatred towards us.
Well, I have a follow-up to that, actually, and that's, where's my order?
You know what? I usually don't handle the orders. That would be a question for Jason. But Jason, unfortunately, has been working around the clock for the last month and a half to try and get all the orders out. But me and two of the lads who work at Severin here in L.A. drove to Arizona about a week and a half ago to actually get stuck in with stuffing boxes and taping them up and doing all that to get as many out as we can, because contrary to what you might imagine from all the I will never order from Severin again online, people did actually come around and still order from us, which is very nice, because we ended up getting kind of a record amount of orders, which we were pleasantly surprised by. It's been a bit of a roller coaster this last couple of months.
I bet. So, David, can you tell us, you know, we do a lot of comic book stuff on our podcast. Can you tell us the origin story of Severin Films, kind of like in a comic book way? Were you, as a lad going to the cinema in Australia, did you eat a radioactive kernel of popcorn and just become this Superman of film distribution? How did this all work out for you?
Well, and as a footnote to that, can you also tell us what Severin means and if it's even a real word?
Yes. Have you ever heard of a band called the Velvet Underground?
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. Well, they were a not popular band in the '60s, fronted by Lou Reed. And
were they from Ireland?
No, they're from New York City. Although John Cale is Welsh.
Never heard of her.
Okay. Well, they are. Anyway, they had a song called Venus in Furs, which is based
Welsh. So she owes you money.
Yes, indeed. That's fucking racist now, Joe.
Oh, sorry.
Say that. Your buddy Bill Clinton said that once and you got taken down.
Ouch.
So anyway, it's from a song of theirs. Severin there from is the protagonist of Venus in Furs, which is the original Masochist text. So it's a very anyway, they're a kind of an art rock band, kind of an anti-hippie band, a bit more into heroin than acid in the 60s. And they actually have quite, their most famous song is called Heroin, but the name came from them. Anyway, me and Carl Daft, who is the co-owner of Severin, we were at school together, and we were both horror fans right as the video era started. And so when video stores start to pop up around our hometown of Nottingham, England, actually, Joe, not Australia. They're very close to each other, kind of like Wales.
All right, Robin Hood was in both places.
Actually, that's true. Russell Crowe did play Robin Hood. Yeah. Anyway, we used to frequent the video stores whenever we could from the age of about 9 and picked up whatever we could in terms of luridly boxed horror movies that weren't usually covered in, you know, the magazines of the era and stuff like that, and became obsessive about horror movies, much to the chagrin of our parents, because they thought we were going to be serial killers. And then all these movies started to be banned in England because the government's ruined everybody's fun and basically said that you're not allowed to get this filth in the home because children might be watching it.
Were those the nasty videotapes?
They were the nasties, exactly, which basically turned us and lots of people like us up and down the country into bootleggers, because we had to illegally source these movies. So we were trading, you know, illegal movies, essentially, when we were in high school. And that was kind of the origin of Severin. It didn't really involve a bite or any kind of costume, although there was a lot of black T-shirts, but no, nothing spandexy. But then we would go to like all night horror shows and stuff like that. And then ultimately we bought our first rights to I think Deranged was the first movie we bought rights to, and started a VHS label. And that just kind of developed on from there.
Was that the Ed Gein movie?
Yeah, that's the Ed Gein movie, directed by Alan Ormsby and Jeff Gillen. And on our VHS release of Deranged, we had like a making of at the end and interviews and stuff. So we were already putting extras on our VHS releases. So I was already always pretty obsessed with, you know, interviewing exploitation filmmakers and stuff like that, which obviously I have now carried on into a ridiculous obsession.
Well, how was it working with Mr. Gein?
You know, he was dead by the time we put that out, unfortunately.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He did live until, I think, 1984. He lived to a ripe old age.
That's good to hear.
Mm-hmm. So that Joe? First film that you acquired,
yeah.
How did that come about? How, you know, I mean, you guys are just fresh to the business, so how did you...
For my summer job when I was in high school, I was actually working at a small video distributor who basically I'd gone into this place to find out if he had any illegal nasties, actually. And he kind of took me under his wing because he enjoyed how much I was into these movies, how passionate I was about it, and asked me if I wanted a job. And obviously I was going to be cheap because I just wanted to work among movies. And so he was kind of a distributor of really the cheapest videos on the market. Like, he would buy stock from companies that were going out of business and stuff like that, and fill gas stations up and down the country with these really cheap, shitty videos. But he also taught me about, you know, packaging them and buying rights to them and stuff like that. And he also had video equipment, like, again, from some guy who was going bankrupt or owed him money. He basically took his video equipment off him as a payment. So that was also how I started learning to shoot documentaries and stuff like that, because he wanted me to use his equipment to make something, so it wasn't just lying in a corner among a bunch of shitty old videos.
The equipment he muscled off the guy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
So my first documentary was made on equipment that I actually don't know where it was sourced from, but this guy ended up with stuff, you know, that you know, he'd do deals like with shady characters up and down England, and would always come back with like, hey, I've got this new fucking thing. I don't even know what it is, but I took it for payment. You know,
you're a real tough guy, mate.
Yeah. No, I wasn't doing the collecting.
Oh, the consumer, I understand.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you still have the distribution rights to that film?
I do not. And it turns out that the person that I bought it off did not have them either. But you know what? We got away with it because I think MGM, we were a little too small fry for MGM to actually notice that we put this movie out. You know, we did pay for it and we did have, you know, a license agreement for it. But as time went on, we realized that he really didn't own the film at all. And he kind of quietly disappeared from the business as well. So it's not something we could have taken up with him.
I can kind of relate to some of that story.
Yeah. What, the disappearing from the business?
Oh, well, no. The not having the rights thing. But go ahead.
Do you have a deranged t-shirt? Because I'm calling MGM, my friends at MGM, now that I'm big time.
I do, but it's misspelled, so it's not under...
Oh, that's fine. It's like Emmanuel.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's the process of picking out these so-called movies you distribute?
Well, it's a lot of them are films that we saw and liked during that era. I mean, there's a lot of nostalgia involved with us wanting to restore and release them and give them a special edition, just as there is for the people who are actually buying them. It's a lot of people who, you know, saw them back during that era. But it's not just that. I mean, I would say, you know, there's a lot of nasties on the Severin line. But there's a lot of stuff that I hadn't seen before, like a lot of these Bruno Mattei movies that were putting out, like Robo War, I had not seen before I picked the movie up. But I knew it by reputation, and then I just need to see a bit of it. And I'm like, we're taking that, you know, like there was a scramble among all these labels. We need to get Robo War, you know, and we beat them all aside and got it ourselves. But
if we were still doing video, I am holding up a copy of Robo War right now. You're not doing video. I'm sorry. Continue.
Robo War's fucking great. And but, you know, that comes from a license, or we've licensed a lot of films from. There's three or four major sales agents in Italy who own the majority of Italian exploitation. And we go back to the well there for lots of our stuff. In other cases, filmmakers come to us to say that their film is available, like the director of Invasion of the Blood Farmers came to us through a mutual friend. He was looking for somebody to license the film to. And I had seen Invasion of the Blood Farmers in the very first trip to the video store with Carl, which is also the same video store and the same label where we picked up Dracula versus Frankenstein. But he came to us and he had the negative, and I was like, this film needs a proper restoration. So that's what we did. And then in the case of a lot of the Intervision titles, you know, we have some younger folk who work at Severin, and they somehow have seen these movies that I've never even heard of, and get quite excited about them. And so, you know, if there's excitement among the ranks about these things and they're talking to each other about how amazing such and such a film is and it's available and we can track down the owner, then chances are we'll give it a shot.
So what's the difference between Severin and Intervision?
Intervision's mainly, I wouldn't say it's all shot on video stuff, which is kind of the simplest answer, but basically we put stuff on Intervision also that doesn't have decent film elements. So there are certain shot and film movies on the Intervision line, which the elements are lost or you know, they were stolen by a previous owner or a previous sales agent or something like that, which happens a lot in low budget movies. And they only have a tape master. Well, that film, it's a shame for that film to be, you know, lost or not be able to be released. So we'll put that on Intervision. If we put something like that on Severin, immediately we would get millions of attacks on forums and stuff like that for such a shitty presentation, which we do anyway when we've got shit. I'm sounding like Banana Man now. I'm gonna stop.
So is that a cover? Like, people don't know the difference that you guys are the same company?
No, I think everybody knows that Severin and Intervision are the same people. I'm not sure about everybody, but I mean, I think people who are interested in the intricacies of who is behind certain labels, they would know that we are both. It's just, we just kind of separate the sort of films that are on Intervision and the sort of films that are on Severin. Although still
appeal. Fuck my shitty question then.
They probably appeal to a similar audience, honestly. I mean, there's certainly a lot of crossover, but you know, some people prefer that really weird shot and video stuff that we have on Intervision, which if we put it on Severin, it might be a bit of a head scratcher.
So with that in mind, when you're saying like some of these younger chaps have brought some of these movies to your attention, has there been something that really caught your eye and you thought, well, this is a good movie that I've never seen? Like, what are some of the standouts for you?
I'd never seen The Burning Moon, which was one of the first titles. And we had a kid. We had a guy called Evan Husney working for us. He's now turned into quite a documentary filmmaker himself. He does that wrestling show on Vice, Behind the Wrestling or whatever it's called.
Oh, Monday Night Raw?
No, not that one. It's called The Dark Side of the Ring. I think that's what it's called.
Oh,
have you seen it? Well, apparently it's very good. It's you know, that's not my world at all. But anyway,
we talked about that on the show, but you wouldn't know that. But go ahead, continue.
Anyway, him and the guy directed Hobo with a Shotgun. They make that show.
What did you say? What with a shotgun?
Hobo with a Shotgun.
Well, maybe you can say that over there, but here, sir, we do not use that type of language.
Anyway, he brought The Burning Moon into the falls, and I'd never seen it. And that last 30-minute hell sequence is really quite something to behold. And I think, you know, that was when I was like, oh, I get it. These shot-on-video movies can actually be quite awesome. He also brought Things and Sledgehammer. And then after he left, well, we'll get to Frankie and his pals, as you said, but that was brought to us by Zach, who will be stopping by here any minute now. And that one is a real head scratcher for me. But you guys have seen it. I haven't seen the whole thing, I have to be honest.
You're good.
Yeah.
You don't have to. When Zach gets here,
ridiculously.
Then I'll go in with those questions. And really, we didn't have a whole lot of questions about that. But if Zach gets here, they may pop up.
Yeah.
hey, can you tell us about the dolly business?
The dolly business, as
you
in...
You know, you had the sinful dwarf dolly and the anthropophagous dolly.
Bless you.
And we're not talking about dollies that you can roll things along on. We're talking about plush toys.
Right, plush toys with like a voice.
We already interviewed Howard Wexler.
we did the Sinful Dwarf toy first. When we were releasing the Sinful Dwarf, I thought that it would be very amusing to do a children's toy because it's very much not a children's movie, and thought it would be an interesting gimmick to do something like that and have it actually speak. And it really is quite a creepy toy when it speaks. I don't know if you've ever slept with one, either of you guys, but if you roll over
all the time
on top of it, it will speak to you in the middle of the night in this high-pitched voice, well, the Sinful Dwarf's voice, and it can be quite alarming. And so that was one I was very, very proud of. And then a filmmaker friend called Mike Etol made a commercial for it with children, which was just hilarious. And so I thought, okay, I think we might be going to hell if hell existed because of this. And then it ended up being quite popular, and people would take photos of their toy with their children, not show the movie to their children, but hey, look at this creepy little toy. And there was sometimes reactions of like, ew, that's a scary toy. Other times they thought it was cute. But some people, you know, actually got quite upset about that and even thought that it was some form of abuse to do that, which obviously is absurd. You're not showing them the film or even encouraging them to watch the film or telling them that it's from a film. But, you know, obviously the joke is that, that you know, to us who know what it is, it seems highly inappropriate to have a toy like that. So that's funny.
So I'm sorry, but I've never seen the Sinful Dwarf. So what does it actually sound like? The voice that the doll made.
I got lots of more toys upstairs. Like that.
That is exactly what it sounds like. And I tried looking for my Sinful Dwarf dolly.
Yeah.
Before the show, so I could like play those clips, but I can't find it.
That's too bad because I have one. Hank, if you can just wait 1 second.
Maybe Lisa has it amongst her toys at this point. I don't know.
I don't know if it's still working. This one's been. This is the office version. So that's his evil laugh with a woman kind of groaning in the background. It is a nice soft bed. So that sort of thing. You know, you've never seen the Sinful Dwarf.
I haven't. I tried to get on the list to get review copies, but I was put on another list, the pay no mind list.
Well, you know, if you'd have told me this sad story last year at Texas Frightmare, I might have been able to do something about it. But seeing as we, you know, are not allowed to do that anymore, well, it's more difficult.
I understand.
We realize that you've become big time, David, and we have to go through your underlings.
That's right. You definitely have to
do things like that.
Yeah, that's right. But I do actually have a portrait of the Simple Dwarf in my office as well, which was drawn for me by Joe.
Oh, that's wonderful. That was a charcoal drawing. Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's wonderful to hear.
I bet it looks good.
It does. Looks very nice in my office.
Sorry, I bet it looks well.
I don't understand what that means.
Smashing.
Yes.
There you go. It looks bellend, mate.
Smashing.
It looks bellend. Is that what you just said?
It is.
Yep, that's a perfect use of that in a sentence. Well done.
Nailed it.
Right.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a shout out to Paul Bearer Press for making those Severin Pride shirts. That was real cool.
Paul Bearer Press did not make the Severin Pride shirts.
That's what the website said.
Who made the Pride Rainbow Severin shirts? That's a question both I and Paul Bearer have asked for years.
I know. It was definitely a cause of much head scratching at the last Texas Frightmare as to how it was even possible to produce such an immaculate shirt. But I'm afraid that's just going to have to stay secret. You have to go to severin-films.com and see what it looks like to be blown away.
I got my eye on you, Jason.
He's too busy. He's not listening to this.
No, he's not. He's not.
Have you ever met Paddington?
No, I have not. I did used to have a Paddington plush toy there when I was a child, if that counts. Maybe that's where the idea for the dwarf toy came from.
Did you have a Paddington toy as a child?
Yeah, actually, it might have been my sister's, but it was definitely around the house when I was growing up. Yeah.
What about Jean-Claude Van Damme? You know him?
But Paddington is now not allowed in England because he's an immigrant from Peru.
That's true. Oh, he got locked up in the last movie, I think.
It's exactly. Darkest Peru.
Yes, indeed. Jean-Claude Van Damme, he's from Brussels, I believe.
The muscles.
Yeah. Yeah, and my favorite film of his is actually Break In the movie. He has a little cameo in that.
He's a hell of a dancer.
Yep.
All right, so David,
he was credited as uncredited background dancer.
Is that what he was credited as?
I think so.
You guys know this guy's filmography probably better than I do. Although when I was working at that Shady Video Distributors in Nottingham, I sold a lot of Jean-Claude Van Damme films, so I was quite familiar with his work back then.
Did you ever meet the Queen?
No, never seen her. I think her car drove by when I was like five, and everybody was fucking waving and throwing shit. But that's as close as I got, I'm afraid.
Did you ever see a Lady or Princess Di's car drive by?
The car that her coffin was in, yes.
How was that?
Well, it was. I happened to be in London at the time, and the place where I was staying, the car actually drove by. So yeah, how was that? It was like a car driving by with lots of people at the side of the road throwing flowers. That's how it was.
So,
did
David,
they sell commemorative plates of her over there too?
Oh yes, they sell all that very much.
So, speaking of royalty in England, have you ever met Hugh Grant?
Yes, I have met Hugh Grant on two occasions. Hugh Grant was actually the second famous person that I ever interviewed, just when Four Weddings and a Funeral was about to come out. So he wasn't yet famous here, but he'd also just made one of my favorite movies, Bitter Moon. And so I was a student at the time and working for some student magazine, and several students were allowed to interview Hugh Grant. What's it like to be an actor in English? But we talked about Lair of the White Worm and Bitter Moon the whole time. And he was very jovial and keen to talk about those movies. He wasn't quite as proud of Lair of the White Worm as he should have been. But Bitter Moon, he was very proud of at the time. And then the second time that I saw him, it was actually when I was watching a European Cup semi-final at the Cat and Fiddle pub on Sunset Boulevard. And he was in disguise, but when England scored, you know, everybody hugs in a English football game fan scenario.
Was this West Hollywood?
No, this was Hollywood proper. This was Hollywood proper, not far from where he got arrested. And
for what?
I'm sure you know what he got arrested for. But it was soliciting, I believe. Was it soliciting?
No, I think it's because he stole that book from the antique shop and then Paddington went to jail for it.
Yeah, that must be what it is. But anyway, I hugged Hugh Grant at that moment when England scored.
Was he strong?
He was very strong. And I still am a big fan of Hugh Grant. If you've seen that latest Guy Ritchie movie, which is not a thing that I often say, you should see the latest Guy Ritchie movie, but he is really fucking good in it. And I would recommend you watch it just for him.
I'd say the same thing about Paddington too, but that whole movie's wonderful. And it's not just Hugh Grant's performance.
That's true. That movie is pretty good. Yeah.
Thank you. I directed it.
Well done. You should have got way more Oscars than you did.
It's the fucking Americans, you know?
Yeah. Xenophobia, that's what that is.
And boy, I'll say. Better not have a Muslim last name here.
Jesus Christ.
Let's not get into politics, my friends.
Who's Polish?
So, David, like there's this whole bidding process with acquiring movies for distribution, correct?
Yes.
So have you ever just been drunk one night and decided, hey, I'm going to bid on this shit?
Yes. And I think this is already in the public domain, but I actually wound up licensing the Goldie Hawn Kurt Russell movie Overboard because I was on the wrong side of too much wine. And was having a debate about like the dodgy ideology behind that movie, and then there was sort of jokes about, oh, you should put it out and double it up with the Sinful Dwarf and stuff like that, and then I was like, you know, I can probably get it, so I actually put a bid in, and I did actually get it, and so there will be a Severin edition of Overboard coming soon.
So you have it.
Yeah.
And there's a Severin Overboard coming out.
No shit. Yes.
Oh, shit.
The remake's really good.
I disagree, but...
Have you ever thought of releasing, like, Jurassic Park or Star Wars? I think that would sell.
Yeah, I put a bid in. I'm sure I put a bid in on that, too. But for some reason, they didn't take my calls.
Oh, Men in Black's cool, too. Not that fourth one, though. But if you can release, like, the trilogy, man,
maybe
that'd
the
be
Godfather
cool.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Or open up a Godfather's Pizza.
Yeah, something like that.
Rest in peace, Herman Cain. Sorry, power. Rest in power.
Rest in power. There you go.
My bad.
So, David, how has this COVID-19 affected?
That wasn't one of the questions.
No, it's not, but we're running out of questions.
No,
how
we're
has
not.
This COVID-19 affected your business? I'm talking to David, not you, fucker. Come on.
Pardon me.
I'm the sponsor of this show.
I bet you'd talk to me if I had an accent.
Well, I'll tell you, it's been okay in terms of like the people are buying discs because they want stuff to watch. So that's been good. But certain things at the manufacturing stage, particularly with complex stuff like our Al Adamson collection, have been severely held up.
What do you mean by complex? What's the complexity there?
Have you seen our box set, our Al Adamson box set?
Well, I've seen pictures of it.
Okay, well, it's
like I watched the documentary on Tubi last night.
Well, it's a very specific kind of book type construction where the discs are inside the pages of the book, and the book is a big sturdy piece of card and then there's a separate book which goes in and out a box and stuff like that. So it's not your regular Blu-ray box with a disc inside, you know.
Well, whose fucking idea was that?
You might well ask. It was a long time in the making, and it was almost like the timing was just immaculately dreadful. In that, basically, we put the order in, and then everything went on to lockdown, and then the things were manufactured overseas, so it was impossible to get them over here because flights weren't coming in and shit, and there were unlimited amount of people in the factories and stuff like that. And the same thing happened with the Umberto Lenzi box, but not quite as bad. But then even at our regular manufacturer in San Francisco, you know, they've been on a limited amount of people to actually pack the product. And so that's been a real hassle. Obviously, all the conventions that we've missed, in particular Texas Frightmare, has been a bit of a hit for all of us. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like I say, we've managed because you know, people are still buying the discs, so we're actually trying to stay as productive as we possibly can.
Well, not only discs, but you can go to Amazon and watch Blood and Flesh, the Al Adamson documentary, which I did. I rented it and I paid for it. And I got one question on that is, and what was it like working with Al?
I never met Al. Spoiler alert, he's no longer with us.
But didn't you interview him, though? Like, half the documentary is an interview of him. Like, well, you just took someone else's interview and called it a movie.
That's pretty much what I did. I basically took this guy, Cisneros, who was a film student who decided to make a documentary about Al Adamson while Al Adamson was still alive.
Why?
And because he liked him. And that footage luckily covered his entire career. So Chad was one of the guys I got in touch with when I first started the documentary, because obviously that forms you know, a pretty important angle in the film. So he's a huge part of it, the fact that he got that interview.
So did his eyebrows really stick out like that, or did he do some shit with Jill?
I think that was special makeup effects.
No, I think he was. I think he had very special follicles.
I don't know if you knew this, but in the States, special, that means like handicapped.
I'm glad you chose words wisely there, young man.
Are there Al Adamson films that you're especially fond of?
I'm especially fond of Dracula vs. Frankenstein because it was the first one that I saw, and I still think it's an absolute hoot. But actually, what I realized as I was going along, for all the fucking shit that people have given Al Adamson over the years, there's a lot of highly entertaining movies in that filmography. So I actually think that you know, when we decided to absurdly put all of his work into one box set, it was like, you know, are we really taking the piss, basically making people pay a high price for a lot of garbage? But the more through the films, I was actually no, these aren't garbage. These are proper fucking exploitation movies. These are enjoyable for the most part. There are exceptions, but you know, you get a good number of hours of quality, low budget exploitation fare across all subgenres of exploitation.
Okay, so since you brought it up, you know, should we be doing this? Should we be charging this amount of money for this film? We have to come to Frankie and his pals.
Zach, could you join us for a minute, please? Yes, I'm happy to talk about Frankie and his pals.
Hi, y'all.
This is Zach.
Hey, hello, Zach. You like drinking, don't you?
Have a beer, Zach.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, wait, we've got to find something to open it with.
Yeah, you're better at that than I am.
Okay.
I'm not calling you an alcoholic. Just
yeah, don't do that. So, shoot.
Okay, so firstly, when you announced Frankie and his pals, a lot of people were saying, oh, yeah, I've been waiting for this to come out for forever, which is bullshit. I think nobody had heard of this movie.
I believe nobody. That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
The only person who had heard of this movie were people in the town where it was shot and Zach, who was from the town adjacent to where it was shot. So
Frankie and his pals adjacent.
He is Frankie and his pals adjacent, yeah. And actually the first time I met Zach when we sort of did an informal interview, he brought it up. He was like, have you, you know, we often talk about the movies that we like when you know, we first meet people who are into this stuff. Well, Zach's one film that he brought up was Frankie and his pals.
It's been a long time coming, yeah, but it's definitely not, you know, like an underground classic that a lot of people had seen. It's a blind buy for most people, I'm assuming.
Right, no, and I think that, and I think there was people that were like trying to up their game, saying, oh yes, I've been waiting for this, I saw this back in the day, which I think they were full of shit. I don't think anybody had seen this, and
that's the internet, you see.
Yeah, and I think, like, now they're probably wishing they hadn't seen this.
That's a direct insult at you, Zach. Do you want to fight back?
I can't really defend myself against that. It's a fairly divisive movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Are you the one I talked to about the refund, or how does this work? I'd like to keep the white case because I think the colored DVD and Blu-ray cases are neat. So, I mean, whatever you need to take off for that, but I'd like to return the disc and artwork to you.
That is fine. The box and the box itself are about $15. You can be refunded the difference.
Wait, okay, is that in pounds? Is that how you say it? Pounds?
Yes, that's it.
Where do you get your colored cases from?
CAB, our manufacturer. we ask them for a certain color. They figure out if they can do it.
What is that, like mixing a tint and a plastic, or?
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is your... Talk to me when you've made a rainbow shirt, all right? And then...
Oh.
I've made a rainbow squirt, if you catch my meaning.
Sounds very homoerotic.
Yeah, it was like that character David Spade played in Frankie and his pals. He made that werewolf squirt. What was his name? Wolfie? Probably. All werewolves. Like, oh, we're going to call him Wolfie because we're creative.
The guy playing Dracula, was he, like, doing an imitation of, like, what's his name from Back to the Future?
Yeah, he was absolutely doing Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, it sounded exactly like Christopher Lloyd.
He said he did it as a gag one day, and everyone thought it was funny, so they ran with it for an entire movie.
Yeah, I bet there was a lot in this movie that the crew thought was funny.
You know what's fun for me, though, is seeing the amount of people who are actually enjoying Frankie and His Pals, because it was a while, wasn't it, where I was like, all right, we'll put it on the schedule. Eventually we'll put it on the schedule. You know, and it took Zach years to track down this movie and the people behind it. And when he finally did, it was a real victory. But it was kind of like one of those things that now he's going to have to, you know, either like trek through India or join Scientology or something, because his entire, you know, existence has basically come to a halt now.
Well, it didn't take long enough.
So, shit. Yeah, this movie, man, it's
shit.
Like, it fucking broke your internet, right? It fucking...
It did.
Like,
it actually did break our internet. It was the biggest cause of the trouble. Not just in the actual breaking of the internet, but also in the amount of upset that it caused amongst the fans. Because not having Zach and his wife scribble on the back of the box was definitely something that I did not expect to be the cause of the most aggro that we've ever received from the horror fans.
So where can I send my shitty movies to break the internet? That would be swell. Is there an address, or do I just put Severn on the envelope and throw it in the mail?
Like, have Santa? You seen Race War the remake? Because that's perfect for this. Because after seeing Frankie and His Pals, I'm thinking, David, is there anything you won't distribute?
Yeah, there's been some things we've turned down.
I don't believe it.
Yep, definitely.
Do you guys have any advice on selling people things they don't want?
Tough crowd.
You know what? Apparently, when we were in Arizona packing those boxes tirelessly with calluses on our hands, it was mainly Frankie and His Pals' fault. It was Frankie and His Pals in every fucking order. So, you know,
How many of those lanyards do you think you're going to get back with the pre-orders to get a free disc?
No idea. No idea. That was that's a Jason question. I didn't really understand what the lanyard was until I got to Arizona and saw it in person.
It's got to be at least like three, right?
I don't know, but we certainly packed a few thousand of them.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, indeed.
Well, you know, we've been having fun here, but that Richard Stanley documentary you made is actual good stuff, and I really like it.
Thank you.
If we ever did a top 10 documentaries list, this would definitely make the consideration.
Definitely. That's hell, you were in Entertainment Weekly?
I was in Entertainment Weekly. Well, I wasn't, but the film was. Yeah.
Do you want to be in it? I know somebody.
Yeah, no, it's good.
I think his name's Daryl.
Yeah, okay, yeah. No, we got quite a lot of press on that one, and it's and it brought a lot of attention to what we do. And I traveled all around the place with Richard, showing it in festivals and stuff like that. So it was a fun ride.
Old Dick's a fucking nut, huh?
Yeah, because of that, did you have to do that documentary where he's out in the mountains and shit? Like, were you obligated to distribute that?
That's where he lives. The documentary is called The Other World, and it's very, it's very much the...
Oh, wait a minute. Did I see this, Joe?
We did. We had we watched this.
Can't win them all.
We've actually distributed most of Richard's work over the years.
All right, so tell me a little bit about the other world, David.
So I've been to Montsegur. The idea for Lost Soul actually came up in Montsegur when I went to visit Richard there. It is a very strange place. And I've been there a few times, and every time I've been there, something otherworldly will happen. there'll always be some person who will walk from the distance and walk over to Richard and say that you have some special sense or something like that. I mean, the fact that he walks around obviously dressed in his hat and cloak and things like that means that he is definitely a magnet for people who want to talk about, you know, strange otherworldly shit. But it happens every fucking time. Every time, and strange coincidences, but it's a very, very beautiful part of the south of France, and I highly recommend anyone going there who will be near the south of France, who will be near that part of the south of France. They should definitely make the effort because it's pretty amazing.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
Any chance you got a going to France money on you?
Yeah, I'll be there probably next week, so I'll check out that area.
Don't think so. Won't let you in with your passport.
Oh, probably not, Tom.
Yeah, now you wish COVID. You were Mexican, huh? Better start going by Jose, motherfucker.
I guess not. Fuck.
So you got any stories of old Dick doing crazy shit, or?
I mean, he doesn't really do crazy shit. He's just, you know, he lives in a different environment. So when he's in Los Angeles, you know, he's a bit more of a fish out of water. But I don't know. We always seem to have a lot of fun when we're doing these things. I don't have anything where he's, you know, conjured up a demon or anything like that. But he does take his demon with him everywhere. He has a demon called Moak, who kind of tells him what to do. Oh no, I'm serious. And you know, when we were making the Theatre Bazaar, which was before Lost Soul, he actually came up with the idea by consulting a Ouija board, which he calls a Ouija board.
Was that the one made by Parker Brothers, or?
Yes, it was, actually. They actually got it from the French equivalent of Toys R Us, and they were actually just dicking about with it. And
it was one carved by a witch.
Yes, exactly. A witch at Parker Brothers did it. And basically that was a fun thing that happened, actually, when we were doing Theatre Bazaar. He had a friend called Urani, who was a pastor. And he was a warlock. And he was the
sorcerer
on Mother of Toads, which was his episode of Theatre Bazaar. And I met Urani. Anyway, we were up at the top of a neighboring town which is at the end of Lost Soul, where he puts his hands in the air and lightning strikes. Well, that was actually happening as we went up there. We were listening to Goblin on the car stereo, and the lightning started and the rain started to come down. And then I started filming and Richard put his arms out. That's the end of Lost Soul. But anyway, they have all kinds of Lovecraft books and stuff like that in this town. They've got lots of Necronomicons, and then lots of people who think they're the reincarnation of Mary Magdalene. And the churches get vandalized by people who are survivors of the Cathars, because it was the last stand of the Cathars at this place, and the Christians obviously slaughtered them, as they do. And then Urani just suddenly showed up, and he had an I Drink Your Blood t-shirt on, which starred Lynn Lowry, who was in my episode of Theatre Bazaar, which I thought was odd. But then Richard told me how he met him. He actually was walking through the woods, and there were a bunch of Lucio Fulci DVD covers hanging from pieces of string in the forest. And it turned out that this was Urani's kind of hermit cabin. And in this hermit cabin, Urani invited him in. On the wall, he had a ticket for Dust Devil, Richard's film, like stuck to the wall.
And in addition to that, in his VCR, he had a copy of Ascension, which is Kareem Hussein's movie. And he was another one of the directors on Theatre Bazaar. So basically, Richard thinks that it was Urani who basically put Theatre Bazaar together with a bunch of spells and things like that. I don't think you're taking this seriously, Joe.
I don't think so. But David, when we do have Texas Frightmare Weekend again and we are in person,
yeah,
are we going to do nothing but talk about Twin Peaks for the duration of that weekend?
That sounds good to me. That is the best television show that ever aired. So,
because I thought of you as I watched the whole Showtime thing, and it's like, me, David, and I are gonna talk about this and argue about this, and so you're gonna get Twin Peaks for distribution, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be fantastic. Now, I've never been able to get my hands on a David Lynch film for distribution, either for Severin or when I was at the previous companies I worked for, Anchor Bay and Blue Underground. Sad.
So you're in LA.
I am.
Yeah.
Is that by choice or?
Yes.
Oh.
Yet, like you have to travel a lot for. You know, for interviews and doing everything. So you've been, like, you can't do shit. Like, you can't travel, you can't do anything like that. So, like, how are you coping with that for business?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's for business, in terms of the special features and stuff like that, we've had to be doing interviews over Zoom. I mean, it's not something that I particularly want to make the norm, but until we're allowed to travel and have people, you know, over to the studio and stuff like that, then that's what we're going to have to do, because we don't want to cut back on the special features that we have on our discs. But as far as actually getting the movies, again, like, it slowed us down in terms of getting scans done in Spain or whatever it may be, but we're still able to do it and get them here and get them color corrected. And luckily, color correctors and restorationists now have their setups at home, so we're not going to a big place to do it, well, which we never really did actually, because it was too expensive. But but now that it's something that colorists are able to have a home suite, then they're still able to complete the job.
So you have your own studio?
The studio belongs to a Jim Koons right next door.
And, oh, good old Jim.
Yeah, I believe he's got somebody in with him right now. Otherwise, I'd tell him to come and say hello. But but he's somebody from...
Jim's a good dude.
He had the guy who did the effects on Tremors. He's interviewing him right now. But we have the suite next door, which has our 4K scanner in it and all of the film material. So we've got cans and cans of film.
What do you do with all those carrots?
I don't understand what that means.
4,000 carrots? You just have a room full of carrots?
Cans of film. Cans.
Do you have a rabbit?
No, I have an anthropophagus.
A what?
Yes, indeed. That's the other plush toy we did, was anthropophagus.
I've got one.
Yeah.
You know what I've got? A question from a loyal listener. Would you mind taking it?
As long as it's not "Where's my order?" Yeah.
No, we already got past that. But thank you. I like that you wanna get those orders out. But no, this is actually from J. Jonah Jerklin, and he'd like to know if you can get him pictures of Spider-Man.
No, but we do have a spider which we made to coincide with the release of The Horrors of Spider Island.
Why don't you ask me to make it for you? Am I no good now? Oh, I forgot I'm on the pay no mind list. That's right.
Yeah, it's kind of like, hey, like, we're gonna get fucking Paul Bearer to do this shit.
But oh, anyway. Yeah, I forgot. Fuck me. That's right. Yeah.
It's not like Pallbearer has you on their podcast. But anyway, go ahead,
Dave. That's all right. I'll just eat my shoes. That's cool.
I thought we settled this on the last Texas right there. I have photos of the two of you fighting.
Sorry, fish and chips don't buy themselves.
Very good.
Neither does warm beer.
That's right. That's
or Paddington memorabilia.
Yes. So that was the one question that came in, huh?
No, we have one more, and it's from the Kyle Driver. Uh-huh. And he would like to know what your favorite movie set in a store is.
My favorite movie set in a store.
Or a shop? Is that what you call them?
Yeah, we call them shops. Where I'm...
Yeah. Well, we call them stores.
I don't know.
Steal my camera.
Intruder, I guess. That's the one off the top of my head.
You'd like that, huh?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not judging.
So, David, no, like, since he brought that up, like he says store.
Oh, no, it would be.
Are there any, like, words that you refuse, like, change around? Like, hey, I'm going to keep on saying this. Because that's our British way of saying this.
You know, I don't do it consciously, but Liz tells me all the time that I'm using words that she hasn't heard before.
What do you like call what? Cigarettes?
I've heard you say that one, David.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you called me a cigarette.
David, he is a cigarette.
You said, hey, you cigarette. And then I blushed.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's good.
No, it's not. I want an apology. That's why we brought you on here.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Apology accepted.
What's next? What's next for Severin? What do you guys got planned?
Well, we're about to
probably record a bunch of shit you can't tell us about, right?
We're about to record our first podcast. Right after this. This is an
Oilers. Everybody does a podcast, David.
Exactly.
Everybody does a podcast. It's passé.
Well, I tell you what's funny is that it was originally recorded right before the sale, and we realized that it wasn't quite working, the one that we did before the sale. But we were so full of piss and vinegar about like how awesome our sale was going to be. I'm quite glad that it didn't go out, to be frank.
Would you say you were more full of piss or more full of vinegar, or were they equal parts?
They were definitely equal parts, yeah. It's kind of like...
Well, that came from Chris from the Conspira Theory podcast.
So there's that. And then what else have we got? Oh, well, what can I talk about? You know, we've got Perdita Durango and Day of the Beast coming up. Those are amazing.
Yeah, I've heard about that for the past 2 years. Are they coming out or not?
Well, you might well ask, but we got the scan in from Spain on Perdita Durango, and then figured out after we premiered it at Fantasia that certain sections, i.e. the racy sections, were not from the original negative. And I discussed it with Kareem Hussein, who was there, and he was like, there's no way that was from the original negative, those just a few scenes. So we had to go back and actually convince them that it wasn't the negative and make them admit that they actually hadn't delivered a scan from the negative. And so did that. And then we realized we were missing one shot from the movie, which one Shade Roop had brought to our attention that had only ever been in a VHS release in Germany. And I was like, this is the kind of shit we have to deal with, where basically it's like, wait, there's a 10-second shot that was in a German VHS release that's never been in any other version. Sure enough, that was true. And so we had to go back again, and we managed to get that particular shot. That's, you know, if you knew what the shot was, you'd probably think, yeah, I could see why they took that out. That is in a film that is all kinds of wrong, that bit is particularly disturbing.
I hope you put the Spaniards in order, David.
Yeah. Well, it's directed by
Rango does need to be out there.
Have you ever seen it, John?
And fucking Acción Mutante. All of his shit needs to be out there. And you need to do it, man.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Acción Mutante is owned by Almodóvar, and they will never license it because it's got uncleared music in it. I've tried. So that's too bad. Bruno Mattei's Cruel Jaws is coming soon.
That's a good one. That's a good Jaws ripoff.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what's special about this Jaws, Joe?
Shark has a handicap.
No, he's cool.
He is cool. And what's good about that is there's already shirts out there for it.
I believe Fast Custom Shirts have already done a Cruel Jaws shirt.
Exactly.
You were basically our guinea pig, our canary in the coal mine, if you will, because we wanted to make sure that Spielberg and co. didn't come after you for your shirts. And now that they didn't, we feel that we're on pretty safe ground with this rather specific Jaws ripoff.
Let's bring it.
Yeah.
So, do you know Andy Sedaris?
Not personally, no.
It's probably a good thing, right?
Yeah, I don't know, is it?
Hmm.
That's like a, maybe. Do you know, I don't know, Tucker Carlson?
That's just all making stuff up, trying to be funny. Sorry, yeah. Tuck.
So what are you guys doing in quarantine? Are you still creating?
That's all we do. Yeah. Oh, I guess not. You said
we're
no.
We're not creating at all, David. What? We're just waiting on you, like I am. I'm waiting on you to make films and or not make films, but distribute films and say, hey, Joe, make a shirt for this. But you know, but I never get that.
Yeah.
It's like it goes over to my pal at Pallbearer Press, and it's like, yeah, it's good that he's getting work, you know, and I guess I'll just go fuck myself. But no, it's
Jason, are you saying this, Jason?
whatever, I was the first guy that made shirts for you, and
You were. I came to your wedding.
You did. You came to my wedding. It was a good time, man. You stayed longer than anybody else. Like, I played Goblin, and you fucking, like, got into that.
That's right.
It was a good time. It was a good time. Yeah,
I'm usually the last to leave the party, I'm afraid to say.
Well, it was a good time, man. It was,
Certainly was. Back when you could travel and hang out and shit.
Yeah, back then. Like, Lisa and I are going to go visit you at some point, and we're going to bring you some Pallbearer Press t-shirts and stuff.
Great. I think I have one on right now.
Oh, I'm sure you do, my friend.
This isn't Pallbearer. Yeah.
All right. Speaking of sucking each other's dicks and getting the fuck out of here, we got one last question, sir.
Yes.
Joe, ask it.
Hey, dude, what's your favorite ice cream?
The question is, what's my favorite ice cream?
Mm-hmm.
I would have to say it would be some sort of caramel thing.
Like what?
I don't know. Like, you know how they have like vanilla with caramel chunks in it? I like that.
Caramel chunks?
Yeah.
Is that the same as caramel chunks or?
It's something like that, yeah.
Sir, we appreciate you giving us some of your time and having a little fun with us.
It's been a lot of fun. Thank you, guys.
It's all right. Do you have, anything you want to promote or?
Well, I just.
Joe, that was a great interview.
Yeah, it was nice.
And I would have felt bad doing that to Howard. But I think David could handle it, and we had a good time.
Yeah. Later, David.
But seriously, folks, www.dwnproductions.net, www.fastcustomshirts.com. And to find this podcast, go to www.boygob.com. Jose?
Hey, we're out of here.
Boy Gob.
Strike, dear mistress, and cure his heart.